Hi, this is Jillian. Just welcoming you to the Mother Nature Will Kill You podcast break. Haley and I are taking some time to get stuff together, to get our lives together, and to celebrate Haley on her big day. And we will be back the first week of March. But until then, we are replaying podcast episodes from the past of this podcast. And today we are finishing up the story of Shackleton, which at this point has just become podcast lore because I reference it so gosh darn much. So hopefully you enjoy, and we'll see y'all back in March.
Hi, I'm Jillian Swinford.
And I'm Haley Brolison.
And this is Mother Nature Will Kill You,
a podcast about the most horrific tragedies
and the most triumphant survival stories that the wilderness can provide.
So grab your backpack
And maybe a bottle of wine.
and let's go on a wild ride into the unknown.
Walking down this road I go, but I am going alone, running far, far from home, till I am but skin and bone. I don't wanna die, but I'll have to try. Oh, I don't wanna die, but I'm on my own.
Recording.
Part two.
Part two, episode four. And we still don't know what we're doing. We're attempting to figure it out as we go.
Sitting in my closet as we speak, trying to figure out the audio.
Yeah. And I have my puppy with me for the beginning of this. So if you hear licking noises, it's because I can't leave her by herself because she will scream. So Aww. She has to be in the room with me. Because
hey,
daddy's
quite
not
all right.
Home.
Waylon is the same way.
Yes. So how are you and what are you drinking in your closet?
It's like a speakeasy over here. Mm-hmm. I'm great. We just got back from bike riding in Key West and that was a little fun time. Watched some sailboat races. I'm actually drinking Liquid IV, the lemon lime flavor, trying to get my hydration back up. So nothing too crazy. Just water yeah. with some added things. What about you?
I am drinking a wine I found on the shelf at HEB. So,
oh, good old HEB.
Yeah, it's, what was it called? Like Sea Pearl, and it's a Sauvignon Blanc, and it's from New Zealand. And that's all I know about
oh,
it.
Oh, lovely. I love it.
So, I have been drinking a lot of white wines lately because red wine makes me have the worst hangovers I've ever had in my life.
Oh, interesting. I wonder why.
I'm sure it's like the tannins and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
It just gives me like the worst migraine I've ever experienced. So that's trying to avoid that, which sucks because I love red wine.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Hi. Daddy's home.
Hi, Corey.
Food's on the kitchen. It's in the kitchen.
Food's on the table in the kitchen.
He'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I'd like to start by saying that Haley is not using her microphone this time because we had a little fiasco with the headphones. So, you know, it may sound a little bit more muffled than usual, but just as a reminder, everyone, we are working through Zoom. And so because we don't live in the same place, we can't sit in the same room and chat with each other. So there's going to be some audio issues no matter what we do, just because we also live in the middle of nowhere and internet sucks at both mm-hmm. of the places we live.
I left my headphones at work, so therefore I'm not using my microphone because I don't have my headphones to go with it. So sorry guys. this is what it is today.
Yeah, and you know, we're not professionals, we're not pretending to be professionals specifically for, you know, audio recording. That's not, I'm literally winging this and so is Haley. So
yeah, We're both winging it, hardcore winging it.
We're learning as we go. So there's two stories that we've talked about over text, but I think we need to talk about in on this podcast.
Yes.
The first one, I actually found them both on the same day, I think. The first
one. It was a wild ride.
It was a weird day.
Yeah. And this is Florida, apparently.
Florida. This is from ABC 13 News, I think, down in Florida. And it's titled Florida Woman Missing for 20 Days Found Alive and Naked in a Sewer System.
Yeah. Casual.
And it's like only Florida.
It would be only Florida. When I read that, I was like, oh, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know why I would think anything else.
No. So it says that this woman was pulled from a sewer in Delray Beach Tuesday morning after being missing for 20 days, which is a long time to be in a poop chute.
Literal poop chute without any food or water.
Right. This woman was identified as 43-year-old Lindsay Kennedy. And basically what happened is on Tuesday, another woman was walking by a sewer drain and heard a woman calling for help. And so my favorite part of the story, though, is how she, like, got there in the first place.
Yeah, it's stupid. You read the full article?
Yes.
Dude, it's stupid. She's like, oh, I was swimming in a canal and I saw this like doorway, so I figured I'd go check it out. And I saw another doorway. I figured I'd go check that one out. And it was just like
she found like a random tunnel while she was swimming in a canal, which if any of you have been to Florida, they're not clean. Especially in residential areas. So like
she had to have been on drugs.
I mean, sure. Yeah. Well, so that's what they're saying. Her family and friends has basically have said that she has a history of doing odd things and making bad decisions.
Love that. That's quote for quote, folks. Like she has a history of making bad decisions. Quote for quote.
And doing odd things. I'm like, it me.
That's like them low-key saying, yeah, she does it wasn't even low-key. They did say in that article that she has a history of doing illegal drugs, mm-hmm. too.
Yes, it's just that she has a history of mental illness and a frequent user of illegal narcotics, which all of that, like mental health is super important. And, you know, if this allows her to either go to rehab or to get some therapy and help, that would be great, because this is not something
homegirl needs it.
Yeah, this is not something you want to be doing on a regular basis. But all in all, the only in Florida.
Yeah, Florida woman for sure.
Yeah. So what I want to know, and what I haven't really been able to find out, partially because I haven't really looked into it because I've been busy. But how did she stay alive?
You think she ate other people's shit?
But that would probably kill you.
Yeah. Unless it was a storm drain or a sewer?
It was a sewer. And she was just hanging out like underneath the city, lost.
Maybe she found a gator and wrestled it. And a gator for 20 days.
Because there wouldn't be any fresh water down there. At all. And mm-mm. You can last more than 20 days without food, it's possible, but you can't last without water for more than 3 days.
Yeah. I don't know. So I was talking to my roommate about this and he brought up the option that she actually was not down there for 20 days and that was a cover up because she felt so embarrassed about getting lost in the sewer.
Yeah.
And so she probably was down there for a shorter amount of time, but said she was down there for lost forever.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to own up to the fact that she fucked up.
I mean, that's the only thing I can think other than she killed a bunch of rats and drank their blood, you know?
Yeah. And if you're tweaking, anything's a possibility, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Cause you can get water from blood. That can keep you hydrated for a time. The other option, yeah.
God, yeah. I did not know that. That's disgusting and frightening. Yeah.
The things I know would scare the shit out of most people.
I'm starting to learn that.
Yeah. The other thing would be drinking pee, but as we kind of established episode one, like that only is a good for a little while, and then your pee just starts becoming too concentrated.
Ugh.
I don't know that you could do that for 20 days.
Yeah, 20 days is a long time.
Also, where would she put it? She was naked. Also, did she...
And how, why, and why was she naked?
Yeah.
Like, she said she was swimming in a canal, but like, wouldn't she be in a bikini?
I would hope so. I don't know, right? What Florida's like decency laws are.
I don't think there are any, really. Honestly, does not surprise me if there were none.
But also, like, if I was skinny dipping, you know, I wouldn't go explore like a random tunnel that I didn't know what it was. Very vulnerable when you're naked.
Yeah. Sorry if you can hear Waylon, by the way.
Waylon.
I can hear him. I'm like, oh, that dog's trying to play.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we literally just got home and I let him out of my room and fed him and let him out the door. And yeah, so. He's trying to play for sure. But yeah, so this lady, naked and stranded for 20 days in the sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
And I read in that article too, that she was kind of wandering around the sewer system until she saw light. Mm-hmm. And then she realized she was at like a grate, and she just stayed there and yelled for help until someone came.
Yeah.
Yeah. Creepy. Imagine walking down the street and then just hearing someone yell for help and looking down and be like, oh shit, a naked woman.
Yeah, that would cause some nightmares for sure. Absolutely. Yeah,
hopefully there were no children around.
Yeah. Well, so that I'm gonna kind of keep following to see if there's like more details that we find out in the next week or so, because I'm genuinely curious if she really did survive down there. What did she do?
Yeah, I'm leaning more towards she tweaked out, got lost, and was only down there for probably like 2 days instead of 20 days.
And lied and then about
since
it.
She was and since she was tweaking, she had no thought about time or anything like that.
Either so. That or she was embarrassed.
Or she was embarrassed, yeah.
So our second story is a Twitter thread from Jensen Karp, who my friend has told me is apparently, and I might be wrong on this, so if anyone knows, let me know, is apparently Topanga's husband in real life, like Topanga from Boy Meets World.
I did see jokes about that, but I cannot confirm.
Yeah. And basically what happened was he found shrimp tails in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal. And they're not just like for a second I was like, oh, well maybe he just placed them there. No, there's like cinnamon sugar baked on to these little baby shrimp tails.
They're definitely shrimp tails. 100% shrimp tails.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a shrimp biologist, so I think I've seen enough shrimp to know for sure.
Yeah.
Those are shrimp tails. So he went basically to General Mills and was like, hey, what's going on with this? And basically, you know, General Mills was like, hey, please contact us and we'll DM you more details. We're really sorry, blah, 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 blah. This is what they responded with. After further investigation with our team, that closely examined the image, it appears to be an accumulation of the cinnamon sugar that sometimes can occur when ingredients aren't thoroughly blended. We assure you that there's no possibility of cross-contamination with shrimp. They're freaking right there.
They are 100% shrimp tails. And then did you see how there was like one scientist came on and was like, yo, I got such and such. I think it was like Zymo Research.
Mm-hmm.
Was like, hey, we can like extract the DNA from this and like run it through our testing and confirm if it's actually shrimp or not. And then everyone was like, oh, General Mills, you got scientists up on here. Like, better retract your statement because that ain't right. They're definitely shrimp.
I mean, there's legit geneticists, and there's a shrimp biologist down by us by in Louisiana that's basically like, hey, like, send us a sample, we'll sequence it and tell you if it's shrimp. But it's so obviously what it is that
it's shrimp tempura, like the tail part. If you guys have ever had shrimp tempura and seen the fried tail on shrimp tempura, that's exactly what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's in Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yes.
And then there's no fucking way that that's accumulated sugars and cinnamon.
Like, why would you even lie about that? I can't.
You know how, like, on shrimp tails, like, I don't know the anatomy of it, but, like, the tail, the very end of the tail kind of, like, fans out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you lay it flat or whatever, like, you can see that it's, like, pinched together in mm-hmm. twos, and, like, it can be, like, flat out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're little tail fins. And the little end part of the telson.
Yeah. So,
I'm telling you, as a shrimp biologist, there it's 100% shrimp tails. Like, I don't have it. I'm telling
you, as a human being, it's 100%
shrimp tails. A human being who's eaten shrimp.
Like, that's some shrimp right there. I've had enough shrimp in my life to know that that is not accumulated sugars.
And I know that one has nothing to do with survival, but it just cracked me up enough that I felt like we need to talk about it.
Yeah, dude, but that's not good. If someone has a shellfish allergy and they're eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch, they could die.
True. Way to bring it back into the topic.
Yeah, I definitely know how to circle it back for sure.
Well, and then the other thing is, it looks like there are little, what looks to me like little rat turds that have been baked into the cereal, mm-hmm. which I don't like rats. We've talked about our rats on this podcast.
Do you still have Mike Pence in your house?
We do. He has chewed on one of my favorite blue velvet pillows.
Oh no.
For no reason.
What a fucking asshole.
I know.
Yeah, but the cereal shit though, like literal cereal shit, like mm-hmm. that's not, General Mills has to step up their game, because ain't good, not looking good for them.
No, I mean, it's like a PR fiasco, and mm-hmm. I just don't understand why they're being weird about it, because
like, just come out and be like, sorry, we don't keep our spaces as clean as we should.
Yeah
That's literally what it is. Like, they need to clean their shit for sure.
It's nasty. Anyway, so a couple of kind of housekeeping that we need to do before we talk about the main story. Basically, if you've listened to episode 2, we had some audio issues on Haley's end that, because I guess I'm like hearing blind, I didn't even notice until we posted.
Hey, it's okay. I mean, everyone understands we're going to have like audio issues to begin with. But we're working on them. We just need everyone to understand that we are aware of them and we are working on them. Yeah. And it's going to take a little bit of trial and error on my end, because I'm also a dumbass and forget my headphones at work. So there is that. I'm also ordering headphones like yours, Jillian, the mm-hmm. over the head ones. Yeah. And then, now I'm sitting in my closet to see if that helps anything. Let be less echoey. So everything's great. Yeah. We're working on it.
it's a work in progress. So the other thing I wanted to bring up that I don't think we made abundantly clear, because we're winging half of this, is the fact that we are a bi-weekly podcast. We're not weekly, and the reason that we did this is because we both work full-time jobs, and this is a fun side project for us, and we definitely want to do it, and we want to create quality content as much as we're able to do. But I didn't want to start off weekly and then have to drop down to bi-weekly, because it was too much for us. So we're going to start with bi-weekly and then see how it goes. And then maybe someday we'll be up to weekly, or we'll be doing bi-weekly main episodes and then weekly like mini episodes. For right now, it's going to be bi-weekly, and we're just going to see how it all goes. And so with that, I think we are going to start with the story, the main story. Woo-hoo! So
Shackleton Part 2, Shack Part Attack. Two. The Shack Attack.
The Return of Dirty Ernie.
The Return of Dirty Ernie. Yes. Yes, my favorite survival story of all time. Return of the Endurance, Shack Attack Part 2.
I did buy the book.
You did buy, show up?
I didn't read it. Finally fucking showed up. Yeah. I didn't read it yet. I'm waiting for you to tell me the whole story to read it, because I'm in, like, I would love to see it from the book version too.
Yeah. And there's a lot, like, I'm kind of telling the Cliff Notes version of that. So, you know, there's a lot more details that I had to leave out because I don't want this to be, I don't want to just sit here and read the book.
Yeah. I could. <fair. laughs> But chapter 8 says.
Yes. So I'm giving you the quick and dirty Ernie.
Love it.
Okay. So if you remember where we left off last time, basically, Shackleton and his crew got stranded, frozen, basically in an ice sheet on the Weddell Sea in Antarctica. Their intention was to cross the Antarctic continent, but they never even got a chance to do that because their ship never made it to the continent. And so basically they were camping out on the sea ice. Basically, if you want to get the full synopsis of it, listen to episode 3. So at this point in the story, it's early April, and the ice flow began breaking up underneath them, literally as they're sleeping. And the next day on April 9th, 1916, Shackleton made the decision, and then all 28 men crowded into 3 small lifeboats and then began making their way towards land. So at this point, they are trying to reach land in order to have some solid ground at the very least between or beneath their feet.
Now, were these lifeboats being pulled by the dogs, or the dogs were already eaten?
The dogs were already eaten at this point.
Okay.
So they ended up killing the dogs in part because they were starving. Everyone was starving to death. And then
so who was pulling these boats?
Well, they're in the water now. So they're
So when you said that they're the ice floes were breaking up, like it broke up enough for
All getting in the lifeboats, and they're getting on the water, and they are trying to find their way out of this icy maze to try to reach land. So, and these boats were not very big. I think the biggest one was about 25 feet long, which is like the size of a small research vessel or like a large outboard motor.
Can probably hold 5 to 7 people.
Should probably max. Only hold 5 to 7 people max, but you know, divide 28 by 3 and you know.
That's what you got.
And they were also sail powered. So they had little masts and little sails, but when there was no wind, they had to row. And so that's how they were getting around in these things.
Okay.
So the initial plan was to try to aim for this island called Deception Island, because it was actually occasionally visited by whalers, and therefore had the potential to actually have provisions stored on the island, you know, because a lot of whalers pass through there and they may need to resupply. And there was even a shelter on this island in the form of a small wooden church. You know, would have been, it's better than a tent, you know, when you're in Antarctica. So,
and they got God's graces. So
exactly. But like many, many plans on this voyage, this one was absolutely dashed to pieces.
Wait, the church was not.
No. I'll explain.
Okay.
I'll explain.
The plan was dashed to pieces.
The plan was dashed to pieces, not the church. I don't know what happened to church because they never made it to Deception Island.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. Here we go.
So on the 9th of April, the crew got into these lifeboats. Like I said, they were 25 foot long, about the size of your average motorboat. not big, but for once, this was actually kind of an advantage as they were completely surrounded by like large chunks of sea ice and icebergs. So it was a lot easier for the smaller boats to be able to maneuver between these obstacles. But at the same time, like they had to be careful because it was very easy for these boats to become crushed between like two icebergs or floes. So it was constant stress. And they had to be kind of awake the entire time that they were in the boats, just being alert and aware. So the men's mental state was at this point starting to deteriorate because they were constantly battered with icy seawater. And the temperatures over this period were sometimes as low as negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit because winter was starting to move in. And they also had very little food at this point. And the freshwater stores that they had brought with them of like the melted snow had often became contaminated with seawater. So they were beginning to become delirious from thirst and hunger during this little sea journey that they are on.
Did they get scurvy too?
Well, they didn't have enough time to get scurvy. We'll get to that. Yeah.
Okay.
So some of the descriptions I've read from this journey are some of the most awful conditions that I've ever heard ever. And I've listened to a lot of podcasts and read a lot of books about situations like this. So I've come across a lot of effed up stuff. But basically, their clothes were constantly soaking wet. And besides the ever-present below zero freezing cold, there was a limited time for sleeping. They were stuck in cramped positions in boats almost the entire time, except for the few times they had to anchor down on an ice floe during particularly rough weather. And then also they were starting to develop salt blisters from sitting, which is similar to like a pressure sore, but it's just exacerbated by the burn of the salt water.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah. That just happens a lot with people who are like kind of, you know, lost at sea. Or like adrift at sea, you know, in lifeboats that you have to deal with. And it's something I actually have had the pleasure of experiencing because I have annoyingly sensitive skin. So I actually often get salt rashes on my forearms after working out on the water for a day, and I just break out in a rash. And so if I can get that from like one day of working out in the field, I can only imagine the pain and discomfort these men were facing.
So did they get like frostbite or hypothermia if they're out there like that?
Well,
we'll get there. All right. Got it.
We're going to get to it.
We're going to get to it. All right.
Yeah.
I'll stop asking questions.
No. It's fine. That's why you're here. So after 6 days of this freaking nightmare, Shackleton decided that it was better to head for the nearest island, which is called Elephant Island. So they managed to navigate to this barren spit of rock, which is just off the tip of the Antarctic Peninsula. And they managed to land on a narrow rock beach there at Elephant Island, and then had to relocate to a larger, safer, rocky beach. But it was the first time they had been on land in 227 days since they had departed for the expedition.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you still have the photos I sent you.
I can pull it up.
Yeah.
All right.
So just to give you an idea of this island, it's not like pretty fun paradise. So if you could look at the picture that, or the two pictures I have of Elephant Island and kind of describe what it looks like for our listeners.
Yeah, it's a big fucking rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's, you got your penguins and your snow, and it's highly elevated. It's not even it's like a straight, what is that, like 90 degree angle up to the top. I don't know if that's the right term, but it's steep elevation, and there's no, like, there's hardly any shoreline. It's pretty much just straight,
like sheer rock faces.
Yeah, like you hit it and you're like, the only way to go is up.
Yeah. And there's like no vegetation whatsoever. There's nothing.
Yeah. My bad.
Did not grow. No. It's okay. There's definitely nothing growing there either. So it's a, you know, but it's,
yeah,
it's better,
like legit just gray. It's gray. Yeah. Big old gray rock.
It's better than being on the sea ice, according to them. So,
I mean, I could imagine that that's a nice break from being on sea ice.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, like, where do you lay down? Because it's like I said, it's not that flat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you got, like, a cliff.
Yeah. So you can see why, like, you know, they had to relocate to a beach that was a little bit better. And I think that picture with the penguins in it is that beach.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, that looks like it has more space, but even then, it's not a lot of space.
No. So at this point, the closest human settlement that could be reached under the prevailing winds was South Georgia Island, which is an island that was 800 miles away. It's south of the very bottom tip of South America. And it's an island chain that at the time had a whaling station, which Norwegian whalers lived at year round.
I wonder what that would have been like.
I mean, That's where a majority of the whaling at the time was happening, because we had already hunted a lot of the whales out to extinction up in like the North Atlantic. So they had to move to different areas basically and exploit those areas. So that's why we came to Antarctica in the first place. So the only lifeboat though that had a prayer of a chance in making it was the James Caird. This was the.
I'm looking at that picture right now, and I'm like, "Yo, what is this? Tell me more."
It is a very tiny, tiny, tiny boat. So it's the biggest and most intact boat after that 6-day sea journey, and the Caird was fixed up, complete with a canvas and wood roof built over the majority of the open boat. And it also, they made a larger sailing mast so they could take advantage of the winds. And this was expected to sail the 800 miles across open ocean to reach South Georgia. Otherwise, no one would know where they were. No one
y'all,
would know.
This thing looks like a toy. It doesn't even look like it's a dinghy. I don't know how. Did this make it the 800 miles? I don't know how it would have. And they got 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 guys that are going to sit on that thing. That's 9 guys in the photo. I'm just assuming that they're going to be on that.
Shackleton chose 5 men to go with him, including the captain of the Endurance, Worsley, as a navigator. And then he brought the carpenter, McNish, and 3 other sailors, Crean, Vincent, and McCarthy. And the rest of those guys in this picture, I think, are pushing them out from the beach so that they could, you know, get out into deeper water. So basically, like I said, if they didn't make it to South Georgia to alert the whalers that their crewmen were still in, you know, on Elephant Island, it is likely that the remainder of the crew would never be rescued and basically would just die of exposure and starvation. So they, it was, you know, not a lot of room for error. So Shackleton left his right-hand man and Antarctic expedition veteran, Frank Wild, as the leader of the men remaining on Elephant Island. And all these men could do now is basically just sit around and wait for a ship on the horizon and survive. And that was... And they didn't, there was absolutely no guarantee that a ship would be coming for them. And they would have of knowing if Shackleton had made it or not.
Oh my God. You think any of them started hallucinating and imagining that a ship was on the horizon?
You know, I would believe it, because I have been completely sound of mind and thought that there was a ship on the horizon.
Yeah.
Turns out I'm just seeing things. So.
Mm-hmm. Shit.
Yeah. So on April 24th, the Caird left Elephant Island. The seas that they would be crossing are, to this day, the worst seas on planet Earth. and they were in a 27-foot lifeboat.
I'm looking at the pictures that you have on this document of this Navy vessel crossing this.
There should be a YouTube link attached if you want to go there watch is. It. You should
I'll watch it after it. We talk, though.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that little fucking dinghy looks like if this is what a Navy ship looks like. I don't know how it didn't get swamped. Like, the bow of this Navy vessel looks like it's about to be taken over by this wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is modern day, the same area that Shackleton was crossing. Wow. So the band of seas that circles Antarctica is called, there's like three bands that are associated with a certain latitude, and they're called the Screaming 60s, the Furious 50s, and the Roaring 40s. And basically, those just, you know, coincide with like a 40 degree latitude, 50 degree latitude, and 60 degree latitude. But they're called that because it's like so rough and the winds are so intense that, I mean, it's self-explanatory, I guess. So because the polar vortex, basically gale force winds blowing off of Antarctica circle around this region. And because, unlike in the Northern Hemisphere, there's no landmass to break the wind, waves just build and build and build and build, and there's nothing to weaken them. So if you go check out that video, see if we can post it with our episode notes. It's a video of a very large naval ship trying to sail in these conditions at these latitudes. And we're talking about 30 to 50 foot seas.
It's not okay.
And I've been in 15 to 30 foot seas before in a 100 foot vessel, and that was scary enough.
All right, so I just started playing it.
Yeah.
This is giving me the heebie-jeebies and also kind of making me a little seasick.
Oh, yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. And this is it's in a modern ship. And so picture that. I mean, this ship is, you know, maybe 200 foot long vessel, maybe 300. And they were sailing in a 27 foot dinghy, basically.
Oh, yeah. And the way that this wave just hits this vessel and it just engulfs them.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it's a big ship. It's a ship for sure.
Yeah. Let's see if there's any info in this like description. The RMZN vessel, HMNZS. Otago, I don't know how to pronounce that, O-T-A-G-O, sailing through a storm in the Southern Ocean, 20-meter swells with 80-kilometer winds. Yikes.
So, obviously, they soon encountered some heavy sea conditions. And basically...
That's a little bit understatement.
Yeah. Basically, what happened was ice was settling onto the boat because the water that was washing over the boat just started freezing and basically made the boat heavy and start to ride sluggishly in these conditions. So these seasoned sailors nearly faced absolute disasters during these massive storms. Shackleton claimed on one night he saw the largest wave he had ever seen in his 26 years at sea. And of course, these waves were constantly getting into the boat, constantly soaking everything. And basically, the only reason they were still upright is because they situated the ballast, so the weight just so the ship wouldn't roll, or the boat. Sorry, it's a boat, it's not a ship. So the boat would just not roll completely over when they would get bashed by these waves because they had the weight distributed in a way that allowed them to stay upright. So the men had to constantly bail water out of the boat though. And so both of the freshwater cisterns that they had became contaminated. So there was no clean drinking water. The men would take shifts with some trying to sleep under that covered hull that I talked about. Worsley, who is the navigator for this voyage, mentioned that there was no way to get comfortable as their sleeping bags had soaked through and they were using rocks as the ballast. So that was their weight distribution. They just got a bunch of rocks and put it in the boat. And so they were essentially sleeping in the roughest seas on Earth on a big pile of rocks.
God bless.
In soaking wet sleeping bags.
How miserable. Oh my God.
These conditions are unbelievable to me. And not to mention, it's still fucking freezing. Fucking
cold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. No, thank you.
Like, I honestly don't understand how they just didn't die. Not just from like the cold and the wet. Obviously, they had survived that for a while, but from the lack of sleep. I mean,
Your body's taking a beating.
Yeah. I mean, sleep deprivation is like a known torture method. I mean, it
basically. Yeah. Didn't they do like those studies across the pond about like keeping people up for like,
yeah,
however long they could until they went insane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it basically just unwinds your brain to the point where death is favorable.
Yeah, you start going crazy too.
Mm-hmm.
Start seeing things.
So then add the, you know, cold and the wet and the discomfort plus lack of sleep. Like, I would just been like, peace, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, thank you.
Yeah. So.
No bueno.
Yeah. They were at this for 14 days.
God. Fuck the story. It just keeps getting worse and worse.
I know. 14 days of what can only be described as the most hellish conditions ever faced on Earth. But they actually reached South Georgia. They reached
They reached it? And wow, good for them.
All due to Worsley, who was the captain of the Endurance. So Shackleton was the expedition leader, but Worsley was supposed to be the captain of the ship that got them there, right?
Okay.
So he was stuck with the rest of them, you know?
Yeah.
So he was the one who managed throughout these storms to navigate to get them to South Georgia Island. And I've done celestial navigation. It's difficult on a clear night. And he was only using like, oh, you know, today we got a glimpse of the moon or a glimpse of these stars. So I quickly calculated our position. And he was able, based on his prior knowledge of sailing through those waters and then like what, you know, readings he could get from celestial bodies, managed to get them to South Georgia.
Wow.
Which is incredible.
Yeah, that's very incredible. I don't know how they could have done that.
Like, give that
man. That's beyond me.
Yeah. Give that man a medal. There's actually a really good documentary on Netflix that's called Shackleton's Captain. That's actually all about Worsley and his experience. And it offers like another look at the expedition through, you know, the eyes of somebody else. And it's just amazing what he was able to do. So they reached South Georgia, but don't celebrate yet. Because unfortunately, they had landed on the wrong side of the island, opposite of where the whaling port was.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Uh-huh. And it's like, okay, we'll just walk across the island. It's no big deal.
No. Knowing this guy, it's never that easy.
No. there was a jagged mountain range in their way.
And of course there was.
They couldn't. Yeah.
Of course.
And they couldn't sail around the island to the whaling port because, well, the way the winds were, it just would have pushed them back out to the middle of the Southern Ocean. And that's the difficult part about sailing, is that sometimes you have to take the long way around in order to take advantage of the wind situation. And so basically, if they had gotten back in their boat, the winds would have just pushed them past South Georgia and they wouldn't have been able to sail around to get to that whaling station.
Wow.
I mean, it's basically the equivalent of losing your grip during a spacewalk and then drifting off into space.
That's fair. Mother Nature, man.
Yeah. So
it'll kill ya.
So basically they're preparing to cross, you know, this mountain range. So in the meantime, let's check out our friends over waiting for them on Elephant Island. So
what are they doing over there?
They're having a great time.
just shooting the shit.
Yeah. So they had gotten to work on converting the remaining smaller lifeboats into what they called the Snuggery.
The Snuggery? Yeah. Like a Snuggie?
It's a very cringy descriptor, if you ask me. Basically, the lifeboats were overturned and turned into roofs, and the walls, okay. like they basically were making a shelter. So the lifeboats were the roofs, and then the walls were created from the rocks and mud on the island.
Mm-hmm.
It was effective in keeping like a lot of the cold and the wind out, and they were able to have a fire, you know, in the snuggery. Mm-hmm. To keep warm. But that fire was super gross because they only had seal blubber as fuel for the fire.
Ew, I bet it stunk.
Yeah, because there's no wood, right? Because there's no trees.
Yeah.
The only wood they have is the ones in the lifeboats, and they may still need those to try to get to South Georgia if Shackleton doesn't make it or they don't see a ship in a certain amount of time. So that's what they're thinking. So they're like, well, we can't burn that wood because we might need that boat later.
Oh, God.
So they're basically just using seal blubber as fuel for the fire. Basically, when you burn seal blubber, it's like really smelly and dirty. And it just creates kind of this black grit. And it just smells.
That's gross.
Yeah. But it was effective. and then the
All
ground.
All these guys are super resourceful, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's like very, very resourceful. So then, okay, so they burned these seal blubbers for warmth. And then what happened to the ground? Sorry, I interrupted.
No, it's fine. So the ground of the hut was also constantly wet and muddy from the heat of the fire. So the fire was so hot that it was melting whatever ice was, you know, on the ground. And so it just created a big muddy mess inside the shelter. And some people were able to sleep up in the boats, like on the benches in the boats, but some people had to sleep on the ground, and so at this point their reindeer hide sleeping bags were starting to literally rot and decay.
Oh, I bet that stunk too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Gross. So there is some point where your furs, you know, no matter how nice they are and how well you've tanned them, will get ruined if they're exposed to water for that long.
Mm-hmm.
So they only had a certain,
I'm sure salt water makes it even worse too.
Yeah. Also, it's just gross.
Yeah. So why didn't they, well, never mind. I was going to ask why they didn't burn those, but I guess it's like, they were still thinking like sleeping bag, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you think that they could have like fashioned seal blubber to be like insulation?
Well, that's a good question.
Sleeping bag?
Yeah. I was wondering why they didn't. Because clearly they had seals that they could kill if they had the seal blubber. So I always wondered why they didn't just skin seals and attempt to tan the hide in some kind of way. I don't know how you would do that. But I mean, the Inuit.
They're burning a fire.
Right.
Isn't that like tanning's fire?
I don't
done,
know.
Right.
I don't know how to tan things.
I just know how to tan my body.
Yeah. But like the Inuit had been tanning hides in the high Arctic for years, so, and they had to have known about that at that point. So I always wonder why they didn't just skin the seals and use that and,
that's
and turn those into sleeping bags. But you know,
maybe it was like one or the other. You couldn't use all of the seals as like multiple resources, and they just chose to burn it instead.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't see why not.
I don't see why not either. But they could have like made new sleeping bags and then burnt the reindeer ones, but I guess the reindeer ones didn't have as much fat probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean,
that's going to be what keeps me up tonight.
I'm like, really think about those reindeer sleeping bags.
Like 1 a.m. Googling things.
Yes. So the men themselves were also in pretty shit shape. So one of them may have suffered a heart attack on that voyage that they did.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah. And another was depressed to the point where he refused to do anything or talk to anyone.
Hey, that me. that's me after a long week. No, mm-hmm. Not doing anything and not talking to anyone. I'll be in my room. Snuggled up watching Netflix.
Like I can really relate to that man, like
me too.
On a spiritual level.
Mm-hmm.
Another had a rather large and painful abscess on his ass from the 6-day journey to Elephant Island. So
a little butt bump.
Yeah, basically his salt blister got so bad that it turned into an abscess. And if you watch the AMC miniseries featuring Kenneth Branagh, whatever, it's good. But it's literally like this little bump right on his tailbone that they have to like
pop. Yeah. Oh, bummer. It's
pretty nasty. And then
bummer, no pun intended.
Bummer. bummer. Yes.
All right. But I'm all right. Look, I got one in. I'm good.
You're good. So another man who's his name was Pierce Blackborough. And he was initially actually a stowaway. He got on their ship when they were in Argentina, thinking it would be fun to go on an Antarctic expedition. So he was a stowaway, and then they found him when they got to Antarctica, and they were like, what
the fuck? That is so funny. I was like, oh, I think it's going to be fun. It was not fun.
Like, so much regret.
I immediately regret this decision.
Like, worst decision that man has ever made in his life.
Also, that's like the definition of fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
Like, fuck around and find out.
So he had frostbite so bad on his feet that he couldn't walk.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay. And so one foot became so infected with gangrene that they had to amputate it.
Ugh.
So fuck around and find out. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll lose a limb.
You lose a foot. So yeah, speaking of frostbite, there was some frostbite going on. But amazingly, he had the worst of it.
Oh, just one foot was gone out of all that?
Yeah.
Jeez, crazy.
I know.
I watched The Last Ascent, and then I watched Everest to keep in line with our stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already watched 127 hours like 2 or 3 times, so I don't need to see that again. But the frostbite in Everest was yikes. Big yikes.
Yeah.
For sure. And then, I was doing some side Googling, like catching up on the survivor stories, you know, like, where are they now? What are they doing? So, yeah.
That's a rough one. And if for anyone who's listening, if you want to know a little bit more about what all is involved when you get frostbite, go listen to episode 2. About the 1996 Everest disaster. It's super fun.
Or just Google Beck Weathers Everest survivor on Google Images and you'll see the aftermath.
Yeah, it's great. So silver lining to all of this, I guess there were a decent amount of seabirds and penguins on the island for them to eat. So they weren't starving, which was good.
But you can only eat so much meat, right? Mm-hmm. Until that like starts affecting your body.
Right. So scurvy becomes a big issue because you're not getting the right amount of vitamins that you need. And they were kind of substituting that with like, not seagrass, like seaweed, like kelp and stuff that they were able to find. And then also there was some grass on the island during like the spring and the summer. I think it's called tussock grass, and they were able to eat some of that. I don't know how good it was for their digestive system, but it might have kind of staved off scurvy. And scurvy is not fun. We will eventually talk about scurvy because it is a fun aspect of 1800s and 1700s, like sailing survival.
Yeah.
You know, you can't keep fruit for a long time. And so basically what happens when you get scurvy is you start bleeding from everything. Like your eyes start bleeding and like your
vitamin C deficiency, right? Yeah. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah. And your hairline starts bleeding and you just start.
Your hairline starts bleeding?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And you start losing teeth, you know?
Oh God. Things always weird me out. That would freak me out.
Yeah. I have a great story for that one that we're going to talk about in the future, but they were able to kind of not get scurvy, which I'm amazed.
Good for that.
I know. All right. So let's check back in with our friend Shaq.
Shaq Attack.
Dirty Ernie. So last we checked, they were on the wrong side of South Georgia Island. Shackleton knew they were going to have to cross that mountainous interior. Mm-hmm. And most of that shoreline is basically just sheer cliffs that drop into the water. So like, you can't walk around like on the beaches. It's not gonna work like that. So the interior is the only way to go. Three of the men were in such bad physical state. They left them in an ice cave along the shore to pick up later when they had gotten help. So Shackleton, Worsley, who was the captain of the Endurance, and Thomas Crean, who was another sailor that was in a good enough physical condition to walk, took off on their 26-mile journey across some of the most difficult mountainous terrain in the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh my God.
I'm not kidding. Like, modern day mountaineers with all of their fancy equipment have been trying to cross South Georgia for years. Since Shackleton's crossing in 1916, the next successful crossing wasn't until 1955.
Oh, wow.
So that's
a long time.
Yeah. And if you scroll down to the pictures, you can see a picture of South Georgia Island during modern day. And then there's another one.
Well, that kind of looks pretty, actually.
There's another one that Frank Hurley, the photographer, took before they left on their trip.
They look like two different places.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, it's black and white.
Yeah, it just looks like it's a lot more mountainous, too. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's not in the same spot.
Yeah. I mean, those are some pretty solid mountains, though.
No, 100% solid.
So check that out. Little port that's down there in that black and white picture is actually the whaling station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see that, actually. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like bottom right corner.
Yeah.
I was looking at all these little seals on the first picture. And I was like, what are all these black bumps on the shoreline there? I was like, oh, they're fucking seals.
They're seals. So it's like I don't want to climb those mountains.
No. I mean, in modern day, like that photo you got up there, it doesn't look too bad. But then the bottom one that Frank Hurley took, that photo mm-hmm. looks pretty bad. I won't do that.
So these men were sailors, not mountaineers. I mean, they didn't have any experience doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did this with one length of rope between each of them.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah, that's all they had.
One length of rope between them?
Yeah. So they just tied.
Watching Everest, that does not sound safe at all.
Yeah. So they had no food. They had threadbare clothing at this point. No proper climbing boots and no map.
Cool, cool, cool. Sounds like a great plan.
Let's fucking do this.
Let's fucking go. Send it.
So they took off on the 18th of May. They walked up and down ridges and slid down dangerous snow-covered mountainsides because it was the fastest way to get them down. So they're like, let's go sledding and hopefully there's not a sharp drop on the other side.
Yeah. Good luck. Only one way to find out.
Yep. So they didn't sleep at all. And they did start hallucinating at this point.
Oh, fuck, I would have for sure. Yeah.
So all three of the men reported seeing a fourth traveler with them.
Jesus, he was with you.
It's definitely Jesus. this is something that's actually been experienced by other survival situation people before. It's called the third man factor. And it's often observed in mountain climbing survival situations. Where whoever is trying to get through reports seeing another person with them, even though there's not another person.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy, but kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, legit, my mind goes to like, oh, God's watching out. So he's got an angel down there with you. That's where my mind goes.
Yeah. So Shackleton stated, I have no doubt that Providence guided us and reported that it seemed to me there were often that we were four, not three.
Wow.
So they marched continuously this way for 3 whole days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow. 3 whole days hallucinating, just off their rocker.
Yeah. So by 7 a.m. in the morning of the 20th, they heard a steam whistle. And this was the first human sound created by an outside human agency that they had heard since the end of 1914.
Oh, wow.
So
that's like 2 years of no human interaction besides your crew.
Yeah. So yeah, it was 1916 when they got there.
Oy.
Yeah. So like zombies, they walked into the whaling station, and the Norwegian whalers who saw them said that they were almost unrecognizable as men.
Oh my God, I'm sure.
They were just so, you know, first of all, they haven't bathed in Lord knows how long.
Ew, they smell. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I just assumed, I guess, since they were getting like splashed, that was kind of like keeping them at bay. But ew, no.
I mean, that would wash some of it, but think how bad their clothes would smell.
Yeah, they're not washing their clothes. They're not washing themselves.
And since they got off on the sea ice they haven't worn any other clothes.
Yeah. And how long has it been since they've gotten off the sea ice?
So that was a couple months.
Yeah. Months in the same clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yikes. And it's not like they were, you know, they had a different outfit every day of the week. They were still probably rotating between the same 2 set of clothes.
Yeah.
Even when, yeah. So
oh,
they smelled.
Good.
Yeah.
They stanky.
Yeah. So, but they were able to get to the head of the whaling station, who eventually recognized them, especially after Shackleton was like, "Yo, I'm Shackleton. We were here 2 years ago. We set out on an expedition. We're in trouble, basically." And this guy was like,
"Oh, fuck."
Yeah. He's like, "Man, let me know what I can do."
Yeah.
So now it was time to go pick up everybody else. So by the 21st of May, Worsley had gone with a whaler to pick up the crew that they had left on the other side of South Georgia Island. Before they crossed it, they left 3 men there because they were too weak to make the crossing. And all 3 of them had survived. They had varying stages of, you know, frostbite and issues like that. But it took 4 attempts and about 4 months to pick up the other crew stranded on Elephant Island.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they had a large ship at this point, it was not able to penetrate the sea ice surrounding Elephant Island.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they left, you know, before the sea ice had set in. That's why they were able to sail out from Elephant Island. But by then the sea ice had, it was winter and the island was completely frozen.
So what'd they do?
So basically on shore, the men were running out of food. They killed all the seabirds they could find, and the penguins weren't using the island as a rookery anymore because it was winter time and they were off doing whatever penguins do in the winter.
Finding rocks for their mate.
Yeah. And so they were basically surviving on the grass growing on the cliffs, and then the seaweeds and kelp, and then some were even chewing their leather clothes and rotten sleeping bags as a food resource.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, the sleeping bag, like, it is animal, so is leather. Leather's made from animals, so, like, that's gross.
But, like, that's your last resort, and also, like, you still need your clothes.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but the fact that they're, like, trying to get anything, and like, that's what they're resorting to now.
Yeah.
They couldn't find any more, like, seals or penguins?
They'd all moved off the island, gone to other places for the winter.
Because seasonally, yeah. Bummer.
Yeah.
That sucks.
So finally, though, on August 30th, the seas were open for some miraculous reason. And within an hour, Shackleton was able to get in a lifeboat, and he called to all of the members of the Endurance crew asking if all was well. And Frank Wild waved back from the shore and said all was well, which basically means that every single man survived.
Oh my God.
So within an hour of that lead and the ice opening up, all of the members of the Endurance crew were aboard the ship, which was now bound for Argentina.
Good for them.
So they all fucking survived.
How the fuck? How does that happen? You would have thought that out of all of them, one of them would have died, especially the one that like fell through the ice when he was sleeping.
Right. Or the dude with the bad frostbite. Or somebody, you know, when they made that 800 mile crossing, maybe somebody would have fallen overboard because.
Yeah.
It's God. Just.
That's amazing.
It blows my mind.
They all survived that.
Yeah. And that's why it's my favorite survival story.
Yeah, I can see why. They went through a shit ton of crazy extreme conditions and did the most resourceful things, and they all came out of it alive.
And for the most part, until the end, none of them went crazy.
Yeah.
It's just... Wow. I don't understand. I really don't.
That's wild.
Yeah. So a majority of the crew, a few months after returning to Europe, however, were immediately sent to the front lines because World War I was still going on.
Wow, that sucks.
And that's what actually did a lot of them in.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It wasn't this crazy story. It was World War One and the horrors of war. But some of them did survive. Frank Hurley, who was that photographer who took all these great pictures, served as a photographer in the Australian Imperial Force and documented a lot of his experiences in World War One. And he also returned to Antarctica in later years to document Douglas Mawson's Australian Antarctic expeditions, which I kind of want to talk about at some point because he's got a really good story too. So you'd think though, after all of that suffering, none of those crewmen would ever want to go back to Antarctica ever again.
God, they did, didn't they?
Well, yeah, Shackleton, Wild, Worsley, and Hurley all did among many of the other crewmen. And for Shackleton, he actually died there. Not from starvation, not from freezing to death or anything like that. Said he had a heart attack when he was heading down for a voyage an expedition in 1922.
Oh, bummer.
I know. And he's buried on South George Island to this day, and basically joining the ranks of explorers from the heroic age of Antarctic exploration whose bodies remain on the continent that they inexplicably loved so much. So this continent has a way of drawing you in and then drawing you back. And I just find that really fascinating. And
yeah,
I think I could be one of those people. Not like,
I think you could too.
Not like dead. Cause
no, but like gone, drawn there, being drawn there. Wow. It's getting late. I can't talk.
It's
it's like 9 o'clock over here. I'm like, it's time for bed. I'm looking at the photos and modern day, how do you pronounce that? McMurdo station? That looks awesome. And then I love the bottom photo when they're like at the bar eating and you're like, oh, look, they even have bananas.
Yeah. So most of the, you know, establishments, I guess, or stations in Antarctica today are run pretty much exclusively for and by scientists, and then all of the construction workers and transport crews and engineers that accompany them to keep those systems basically up and running so that they can have, you know, modern conveniences in the coldest place in the world. And so McMurdo is probably one of the biggest ones, and that's a US station. And they have like several bars. So you can go down there and get a drink. And clearly in the picture, there's a bunch of bananas hanging next to the bar. So clearly, you know, they have luxury. They get to eat fruit.
Yeah.
You're not stuck eating seals. So
man, importing all of those textiles though to build that station must have been a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Waylon. Can't come in yet.
Oh, Waylon. Yeah, so it's a very different place, but if you leave that area, you're very much in the same position still as many Antarctic explorers have been, except you have the capability to radio a helicopter to pick you up if you're really in trouble. Nice. That's about the only difference. And then if you scroll up, there's one more picture that is all of the men that were rescued from Elephant Island the day they were rescued. And they look gross.
They do look gross. They look like they've been through it.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. So that is the story of Ernest Shackleton and the crew of the Endurance and their amazing survival experience in the Antarctic.
So my sources for this story was the book Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage, which is by Alfred Lansing. And if you want to know more about this story, this book has a lot of really awesome details that I did include in this story because of time's sake. And then I also used an article from Popular Mechanics called Chasing Ernest, The Journey to South Georgia to Find the Ghost of Shackleton by Craig Becker.
Yeah. I love it. It's a great story.
Yeah.
I'm glad we split it up into two parts. It's a long one too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I decided to start doing that after the Everest one.
Yeah. That's so fair.
That's a long episode.
Yeah. That's long. It's all good though.
I like to do a lot of research because I feel like it makes the story more real. And I like to talk about like the conditions that they experience and everything like that.
So. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so after that, let's decompress a little, not think about frostbite for a hot minute. What good thing happened to you this week, or what are you looking forward to?
Good thing that happened to me this week. Ooh, sorry, I just had garble. And here's Waylon with his toy in my face. Cool. A good thing that happened to me this week. I got back into sailing again. I hadn't been at my sailing classes for a bit. And yesterday I got back into it. So that was fun. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And then also today I rode bikes around Key West with some friends and got a beer and hung out and listened to some jazz music at the bar. So
yeah,
all socially distant and outdoors. So good things.
That's one of the benefits of living in the South during this time of year, is that you can do those kinds of like outdoor things and still socially distance because the weather's nice.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah. And the bar we were at was like an indoor outdoor bar. Cause you know, Florida, they just kind of have like open air stuff everywhere. So
yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's good. Yeah, what about you?
Those. So I got my first vaccination shot.
Oh, I did. I got mine too, but that was last week. So yeah. It didn't fit into this week.
Well,
how did you feel
later.
Afterwards?
I felt fine. I'm getting my next one, not this Monday, but next Monday. And everybody tells me that it's going to be awful.
Same. Did you get Pfizer or Moderna?
I got Pfizer.
Same. Yeah. I heard the same thing.
Yeah. So I was talking to my pharmacist at CVS and was like, yo, how do I get an appointment? Cause I'm in the 1B group. And so was Corey. He was like, check early. Monday morning is when they switch over the new week for the scheduling.
Okay.
And so
that's good to know.
Yeah.
Cause PSA. We were checking down here. Well, God, like we got ours at like on a whim. It was like the housing authority had extras and we heard through a friend that they did, so we scrambled and got down there in time and got one.
Yeah.
But come to find out, like Florida Keys doesn't have Pfizer vaccines. There's like only one of the hospitals up in Tavernier has them.
Mm-hmm.
And so like if we wanted to get our second dose, we'd have to go to the mainland.
Oh.
And then we like made some calls and I guess apparently the CVS on Stock Island is now carrying Pfizer, but it's still like kind of iffy to get mm-hmm. an appointment. We'll see. I feel like it's going to be like down to the wire to get the second one and in the right time frame, but hopefully we'll get it.
Well, you got to do what you got to do.
I know.
Our bosses at work have been pretty chill about like, hey, if you get an appointment, just go do it, you know?
Yeah.
So we're grateful for that. So I'm getting my second one. And it's crazy because, I mean, people are coming from Houston to come here and get their shots. So, which is, it's 2 hours away.
It's a long time. That's wild. Far.
So I'm just feeling very grateful right now and a lot more relaxed than I have been in a long time.
Same. I was literally about to cry on the way down to get our vaccine. Mm-hmm. If my roommate wasn't in the car with me, I probably would have cried. Mm-hmm. It was a large weight was lifted.
Yeah.
Because I haven't even met my nephew yet. He's going to be... And so, yeah, my brother is turning 30 this year, mm-hmm. and by the time I'm fully vaccinated, we'll be, like, right on time to be able to go out to LA and, like, be there for my brother's birthday, but then also finally meet my nephew.
Yeah.
And then at that point, my nephew is going to be about 8 months old.
Yeah, but he won't remember shit, you know?
I know, but it's just, like, it's just a thing, you know? Yeah. Like, oh, I saw you when you were a baby. And I'm like, oh, you were kind of, like, almost a year old by the time I finally saw you.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are struggling with that right now, for sure.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad you're vaccinated.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I am looking forward. I just went to the store today and bought a fuck ton of Easter candy. And I'm looking forward to eating it.
Get them Reese's eggs.
That's Corey's favorite. I'm not against, I like them too, but I go for the Starburst jelly beans.
Oh, yeah.
That's my go-to Easter. And then like just the Cadbury mini eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the cream eggs are too much.
Too rich. Yeah. That's fair. Got you on that one.
Corey's obsessed with them, so I bought him some of those too. I'm like, great.
Love it.
All right. So thank you everybody for listening. We are super excited to continue working on this little pet project that we have and watching it grow and talking about screwed up shit every week or every other week. Sorry, we're bi-weekly.
Bi-weekly. Every other week.
Haley, where can everybody find us?
Yeah, if you guys want to come follow us on social and see what we're up to, aka see the photos that we talk about on this episode and previous episodes, you can find us on Instagram at Mother Nature Will Kill You Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at MNWKY Podcast. And then we also have our website that is MotherNatureWillKillYouPodcast.com. So those are the three.
Yeah. Come check us out. Look at all the pictures that we keep talking about.
Yeah.
Because they will definitely be in the show notes. And then we pick a few for like the Instagram and the Twitter. So thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new story.
Stay safe. But most of all,
stay curious, explorers.